Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to The Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds. I am an author, management consultant, and interim chair in the Management, Marketing, and Public Administration Department in Higher Ed. My area of research is toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? And as a workplace toxicologist, I help you to dismantle the poison people bring to work. Now, I am not alone. I have a wonderful co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Dr. Lonnie, come on now.
Good evening. Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. It's always exciting to be here at the Access Point. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris. I'm a management consultant and professor. I spend my time helping really talented people unravel crazy things that happen at work. My goal is always to help you hate your job less. So I love when we get to have these conversations. I want to make sure before we get started, everyone remembers to check out the Access Point on Flipboard. You can go to flipboard.com/@the Access Point for all the links to the articles and studies and anything we reference in this conversation or any of our previous ones.
That's right. You all know we keep it real. And so for that reason, we have a famous disclaimer for you. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated.
In other words, I said what I said, but you can't hold me to that. Tonight's conversation is about something I think is so important, and we're really unpacking workplace communication, but specifically related to manipulation in the workplace. And we have such an incredible guest to help us navigate this conversation. Our guest today is Deborah Owens, the founder and CEO of Corporate Alleycat, where they provide people of color with the tools and strategies to navigate corporate spaces. She's a seasoned executive and change agent with more than 20 years work in Fortune 100 business organizations. She has had a front row seat to the unique experiences and challenges faced by people of color across many workplace environments. She's director of training and a sales leader. She's developed and implemented strategies to close performance gaps, maximize performance, and exceed business objectives. She has led the conception, design, implementation of franchise and enterprise-wide initiatives, including leadership development, talent management, sales, marketing training, and employee development with various companies, including a long time stint at Johnson & Johnson, with Merck, and with Honeywell. She's received multiple awards and recognition for organizational impact and driving outstanding results. Deborah's partnership with senior executives as a diversity and inclusion advocate, her role as the chair of the African American Employee Resource Group, and her personal experiences inspires this work. She is a proud Howard University Bison, where she earned her bachelor's degree in economics. Deborah, welcome to the Access Point.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and can't wait to jump into the conversation.
Well, let's jump right in. Let's start here. We frame this conversation around communication with a particular focus on manipulation. I want to make sure people are clear what we're talking about here. When we start to talk about people being manipulated at work, what is it that we're discussing?
When people are being manipulated at work, Can I twist my answer a little bit on this?
You can twist whatever you like. You are the expert.
All right. So I think manipulation is a tricky word. I will say this from my experience. It's easy to feel manipulated when you don't understand the environment in which you work. Mm. When you don't have information, when you don't ask for help, many things can make you feel like you've been manipulated. Now, you know, is there real manipulation? Yes. So some of the things that come to my mind, I had a colleague and we used to have this term called don't get futured. And we think that's very specific to Black and brown professionals because mm-hmm. they kind of say to you, Dr. Lonnie, you're doing a great job. You want to go to the next level. You want to do leadership. Okay, just keep doing what you're doing. No timeline, no specifics, no. That to me is a form of manipulation, right?
Yes.
There are many other scenarios where people can feel manipulated. But at the corporate alley cat, what we want to do is to focus on those situations, but give you strategies to address them. Because what I find is what happens is when you have been manipulated or you feel like you've been manipulated, you still have options. You don't have to just stay there and feel like somebody has done something to you. Right? Yeah. You always have options and there's always a way to address it. And by the way, I'm just going to just put this out there for everyone. I believe escalation is your friend, and I'll just leave it at that and we can come back to it later.
Talk about it. Escalation is your friend. Dr. Wendy, you got any thoughts on that?
I do. That is true about that manipulation. I think sometimes it happens in spaces that we don't expect it. So those comments can come in a very informal way and you feel kind of like, ooh, that's really good. They like what I'm doing.
Right? So been
there. Yeah. So it gives you this warm and fuzzy that you're doing the right thing and you just need to keep doing all those things that you feel got the attention to even have that comment made towards you. And you don't feel that that is manipulation. So it can show up and you may not recognize it as such. And you may not think that you need to do anything about it
until.
You look for the rewards that are promised with all of this great work that you're doing and it doesn't show up.
So I love this because what it seems like both of you are getting at is this idea of gaslighting. And I want to focus on this terminology because the word gaslighting was actually selected in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary as the 2022 word of the year. And I used to hear it all the time, but I didn't really know what it meant, right? And so there's a group of researchers out of Canada who wrote a study called You Think I'm Insane. And this was earlier at the end of the summer in August. And they talk about it from the standpoint of gaslighting is when the perpetuator, the culprit, argues that you are out of touch with reality, that your sense of reality is really imagination, that your views should not be taken seriously. And in this environment, you as the employee would become increasingly dependent upon that person that is gaslighting you because their sense of reality seems more prominent because they've made you think that yours is not, right? You're relying on their opinion. Your sense of agency sort of decreases. So if that's the way we look at it in the larger environment, I want us to break that down for, when we look at it for people of color, for Black and brown people. When we're talking about gaslighting, what is that? Deborah, why don't you start us out?
So when I think of gaslighting, I mean, I can think of some of my own experiences where I may say, hey, I talked to John and I'm concerned about the conversation, what he said to me, the way it was said. And somebody says, oh, I know John. John is great. John would not, oh, not John. You know how John
is. He's wonderful.
John. You know how John is.
You know. And so people will lead you to believe that, and it's, and I think Black folks are very sensitive to this, right? Because there's, they've kind of done what I call the Jedi mind trick on us. So, you know, we're like, well, I don't want to seem like I was upset just because John said something crazy, sexist or racist. I don't want to seem like the upset person. I don't want to seem angry. I don't want to seem like it bothered me. And I just, I don't agree with that. And I was at a conference and I want to give her credit. I think it was Tara J. Frank. And I thought this was really great. And she said, one of the ways that you can handle gaslighting is when you're telling someone in corporate or in the workplace about your experience, you say, the way I experienced it. So now you don't, you can't gaslight me because you can't tell me
about my
experience.
Come on.
Only I can tell you about my experience. I've actually used that in my personal life as well, right? So it's a great statement because what you're saying is, let me share with you how I experienced it. And I know how I feel. And that is not going to change based on your relationship to John. So I think that's a great phrase to use in the workplace because it removes a lot of that. Well, I don't think you may have heard him wrong. You may, no. I experienced. This is what I experienced. So I think that's a great phrase.
I love that.
A great framing.
I love that. Dr. Wendy, your thoughts?
I love that too. And as a matter of fact, it has to be practiced because when you encounter those situations, you instantly feel as though you have to defend what you have experienced. So it's going to take practice to get in the habit of doing that because so often we encounter the responses that perhaps you didn't hear that, you know, was it in the morning? Was he, had he had his cup of coffee yet? Right. And make excuses for that behavior. So I love that. And I do think that we need to get in the habit of starting our sentences off with, this is how I experienced it.
And you know something else, Dr. Lonnie, I wanted to say, because we're talking about manipulation and gaslighting. Mm-hmm. Those definitely happen in corporate and in the workplace. And some people feel like they're always experiencing that. But I think something that can mitigate that experience is clarity. Mm. Clarity is king, right? And so what I found in my experience that people... First of all, we know when something doesn't feel right. I don't need to understand how you manipulated me. Mm-hmm. I know what I feel and something doesn't feel right. So I did this little very informal survey about people who had experiences in the workplace. And I said, you know, when did you know something was off? And people have said things like my first conversation with my manager. I knew the way that person looked at me. I had that vibe. So we know. What I find is that we disregard our knowing.
Mm.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Wow.
You feel that way for a reason. Now, do you have to address everything you feel? No, but you can take note of it. And if you're seeing a pattern or, you know, I think we all have that person in the workplace where you're like, I just got this email. I'm about to forward it to you before I respond because I want to make sure that I'm not.
I know she didn't just say.
And I'm not reading too much into this before I send my response, right? Doesn't everybody have a couple people like that?
Absolutely.
A couple times a day.
We don't want the email to look like you had smoke.
A couple times a day. Let me get up on this computer and walk away for a minute.
So I think if we go into... or go into and respond in those situations with clarity, it makes things a lot easier. And this is what I've learned in the years that I've had the corporate alley cat, along with my corporate experience, is that Black people work too hard. We are twisting ourselves into knots, trying to respond the way we want to, but in a way that's acceptable to other people without them thinking we're angry or we're upset. And I say to people sometimes, well, why wouldn't you be upset if you didn't get your bonus? Like, that wouldn't be normal, right? You can bring your emotions to work. It is fine, I believe, to be upset at stuff that happens at work, to be concerned about it, to get angry. Now, we don't want violence or anything like that, but I don't think that we always have to act like everything is okay.
Exactly.
I think that that is not helping us. I think that is hurting us. And there are ways to do that, right? Like, I'm really concerned about this process. I'm really disturbed. And I'd like to get some clarity on the process, right? So what I would say is, if you feel like you're in a situation where you've been manipulated or gaslighting, what do you need to know to feel better? Start asking those questions. And don't worry about if the other person's going to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Because we're all big boys and girls in the workplace.
I love that.
Right?
And even if they aren't, we still need to.
And even if there aren't, I always tell people, they'll be fine by the end of the day.
That's right.
Right?
But they'll get over it.
That's right.
They'll get over. They do. You know, but we are not doing ourselves any favors by accepting certain scenarios, behaviors, policies, and not saying anything. It's just making us crazy internally, and then we're just all getting sick.
And it also gives them permission. Wouldn't you say,
to continue?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I want to pose this question to you, and I saw this in a piece by the poet and playwright, Darryl Lorenzo Wellington. And this is from probably the first year of the pandemic. It was in the Santa Fe Reporter, and the title was, "Is Gaslighting the New Black?" Right? But I want to follow that with something, because the Word in Black site has been doing some work and really recap, I think, a really important address that the president of California State University, Sacramento, gave, Dr. J. Luke Wood. And he says, it's not just gaslighting, but sometimes it's also race lighting, right? So it's manipulation that's based on race issues, and they're intended to cause you to second guess your own experiences, your judgment, your memories, and ultimately your own humanity. So if it's not just gaslighting, and it's also race lighting, is this something where it is intentional towards us? Dr. Wendy, why don't you start us off?
I would say that race lighting would be intentional, because it's done so to get a certain type of response. And when we even hear the term race lighting, I mean, I was stunned at the term, but not the definition. So when this type of manipulation shows up, it means that we have to be prepared with the right language to even know what has just happened to us. A lot of times these things happen and it catches us off guard, because we are expecting a different response in the workplace. When we walk in, we have ideas as to what we want to do, to work hard, to be rewarded. That's no different than the next person at work. And so when race lighting takes place, we are caught off guard. I agree with you when you say that it's okay for us to be angry. We need to have those expressions and feel free to express the fact that what you're doing, we don't care for. And it is okay to call it out by name, whether or not they like it or appreciate it. That is your experience. And just like sometimes we have to look up the definition of terms to understand what is happening to us, it's okay to let them know we know the deal.
Yeah.
You know what? I was just thinking, can race lighting be the same as coded language, or can they be cousins? Can they be cousins?
So they can be cousins.
Because that's what I think about when I think about race lighting. I think of some of that messaging. Let me just say that could be intentional or not be intentional, but has the same impact. And I think of terms like that person isn't strategic enough, or are they analytical, or, you know, there's something about them. Or they may say to you, one of the things a colleague and I talk about is, for Black men, for instance, they'll say, you know, you need to be more approachable.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. About Black women too. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's frequent. Or when I was in the IT industry, I often heard that the reason why you're in this position is because to be technical means you have to understand numbers.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Or even going back when they may say, you know, Dr. Wendy, you know, people like working with you and, you know, we enjoy, but, you know, there is the feeling that you might be a little sensitive about.
Yeah, that's
and then you're like, am I being too sensitive? But they said something crazy about Black. Am I being too sensitive? Right. And you're not.
Right.
But you're not fitting into that narrative, or you're starting to shake things up in a way that may be making other people uncomfortable.
The other part to that is, even when they say that, they may preface it, what they want to say, with a compliment, because they're trying to show that
the
you are
overly
compliment, sensitive.
Huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Or they make you angry because they know they're about to say something that is going to be, you know, where you're going to have a problem accepting or even hearing it. They'll say something like, I love your hair. You're so pretty. I like the colors you're wearing today. You dress so nice. And then, right?
And then they're like,
Miss, what happens?
Are you going to, I love your hair, Miss Wendy. Are you going to be wearing it like that for the presentation tomorrow?
Come on now. Come on now.
I love those bright colors. You know, our client is fairly conservative. Will you be wearing something like that at the presentation?
That's right. Or I like your earrings. I love those hoops. They're just so beautiful. But I like your small pearls better. You know, the ones that you had on Monday?
Mm-hmm. I'll give you a great example. A friend of mine who's in a very senior position was wearing braids for a while, and then she took the braids out and went with her normal kind of perm straight hair. And another senior leader said, let's just call the person Wendy, said, the professional Wendy is here today.
You lying to me.
I am not. I am talking at executive leadership levels.
Wow.
Oh, so Lonnie, I have a great example. I had someone who had come to me because, from this person's perspective, out of the blue, their manager said they had a pattern of poor performance and sent them a couple of emails with all of these things that they weren't doing. And by the way, none of them were objective. They were subjective. And he was like, I don't know what's going on. I, like, this just came out of the blue. And so what we did was we crafted an email that we sent to the manager. And so this is a part where I think you talk about how do you actually address these situations?
Yeah.
And so what we did was we said something to the effect, hey, the purpose of this email is to respond to the email you sent dated blah, blah, blah with the subject line, pattern of poor performance. And we basically asked them, could you share with me specific incidents and behaviors that you observed that led you to this conclusion? And then we went on to say that I am surprised by your comment. And then we said, because I've been here for 12 years and I've never received anything below meet expectations. You've never given me anything in writing regarding my performance. This is the first time you brought up performance to me. And I don't know, there might've been something else. And then we said, something to the fact that I'd love to get together so we can partner and resolve this situation. And I may be getting the order out. And we said, oh, and by the way, here's an email from a senior leader complimenting him on a project that he had just completed. And so what happens is, if you have a great manager, they love that email, right? Because it gives them the opportunity to say, hey, you know, thanks for this. Here are the things that I saw, and here are the things I think you need to be working on. Now, if you have a rogue manager, they're like, oh, now they have to start working. Because you're saying, we can't really continue this conversation until you can provide me with some data. You know, what did you observe? What did you see? And it also brings into question, like, you've never given me anything in writing. I've never gotten anything under a meets expectation. Oh, I remember the other one was 3 months ago, you gave me this on my evaluation. And so now the manager has to explain that. And again, if you're doing it with the right intention, it's easy. But if you're not, they're going to have to do some work. And what happened in this situation is the manager didn't respond when they had their next one-on-one. The manager didn't respond. And finally, he said, hey, you haven't responded to my email. And she said, you're documenting.
I'm documenting. Because I'm listening going, is this me? Deborah, were you coaching me? This happened to me exactly the way you described it in that same order. And I said, hell yes, I am documenting.
Exactly. And so she said, I didn't mean you had a pattern of poor performance. I was just trying to give you some general coaching.
Nope.
So we had to, I always say you have to do another email and you have to kill it, because what happens is sometimes people hear that like, and they're like, oh, okay. So the situation resolved. No, it's got to be resolved in writing so that both parties know that you can never bring this up again, because we've all had those situations where you think it's resolved. And then 6 months later, they try to, you know, slide it into a performance review or in a conversation. And so we had to do another email. And in addition to that, we put together a little plan so they could, you know, suggested that they spend a little more time talking about how they can communicate more effectively. But I share that example because just because someone manipulates you or they gaslight you or they race light you doesn't mean that you cannot respond. And I always say, give it back to them.
That's critical.
Right?
Critical.
Like, if they say something, you're like, what? Pattern of poor performance, it is perfectly okay to say, you know, I need you to break this down for me. Because oftentimes we just internalize that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, you know, somebody will say, well, they said I had a pattern of poor performance. I'm like, well, what does that mean? They're like, I don't know. You need to know. And it is okay to ask those questions. And if your manager gets uncomfortable because you're asking for clarity and specifics on this type of feedback, that's a problem, but not for you. It's not your problem.
Interesting. Thank you so much for sharing those examples. And I got excited about it because it really does sound like something I experienced. And it was almost a recap. Exactly. Almost a recap of exactly what happened and exactly how I handled it. But I didn't have your coach. So I think we're spirit. I didn't have you as a coach. So I think we're spirit animals and you were just channeling that through me. So I appreciate you from 10 years ago because we got that. I want to move us on something because I think this is important as we continue it, that the discussion about manipulation and gaslighting and race lighting is often about the relationship between an employee and a person of power, someone who has some other type of influence that they can exert. They control resources, might be a supervisor, much like the example you just gave us. But I want us to look at how do we explain this. There was a study earlier in the summer, and it's about supervisory gaslighting and its effect on organizational commitment. So people wanting to stay and be part of this culture. And it's in this journal called, it's in a book series called Research on Emotions in Organizations. And this particular piece is called Emotions During Times of Disruption. So I want you to start with this for me, Dr. Wendy, because this is, I think, a really interesting one. When they looked at this leader-member piece, right? We know that from theory that when bosses and employees are working together and we see this manipulation, this gaslighting, they found that people who had higher levels of emotional intelligence who experienced gaslighting were more negatively impacted by that. So if you were higher in emotional intelligence, you felt it more. It was more negatively impactful to you as a person. Let's unpack that. Why are people who, because I think I'm pretty in tune with how I feel and what I say and what I'm experiencing. I'm sure there are a lot of people who listen to the Access Point who say, hey, I'm high on that. So why do people who are in tune with themselves in that way experience this in an even more treacherous way?
I would say that I think the way we feel about ourselves is how we think other people view us. And that may not necessarily be true. So when we have these experiences, it doesn't represent anything about how we see ourselves, how we feel about supporting the mission and vision of the organization. Because when we're going to work, we're going to work to do just that.
I love that. And I'm quiet because I'm thinking about, man, that makes so much sense. You are so brilliant. Because I'm trying to figure that out. Like, why is that? Because I think I am very strongly opinionated, very in tune with who I am and how I show up and how I represent. And I was going, well, why would this impact me so much? Deborah, what's your thought?
I was really thinking about that too. And so I want to make sure that I understand. So people who have a higher emotional IQ are more negatively impacted by gaslighting. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. EQ, right?
EQ, yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I actually had a situation, but don't we all think we are our emotional EQ or is at a high
of
level?
So
I don't know where I am. I know where I think I am or where I would want to be. I don't know if I'm really there or not. But I remember I had a boss, and this was during a discrimination situation, and they started copying people on emails inappropriately.
Oh, wow.
And that really bothered me because I believe I am a person of integrity and that I was a team player and all of the things that you should be. And it felt like this was an attack on my character. And for me, that bothered me, and that was totally unacceptable to me. And it felt like it just crossed a line. And that was the scenario because it bothered me so much. I ended up sending an email to the president of the company.
Wow.
Hey, wow. I got a CC for you. I love this. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you want to know what the email said or what?
No. I was just applauding, sending it. That's what we do. Somebody else got to get involved. Dr. Wendy, you were going to add to that.
You know, I think about myself as a young professional when that happened, where you do second guess and think about, did I deserve this? Are they setting me up? But I think as I grew into my career, because corporate America is a beast, right? So it's one of the beasts, let me put it that way. But what I will say is that during that time, I also learned that people CCing others on an email isn't necessarily representative of them disapproving of what you represent, what you do, as much as it could be a sense of insecurity within themselves that this is their mechanism to protect themselves, right? To try to build a case.
Yep,
you don't always see that though.
Yes.
You don't see that because again, we deliberately, intentionally come to work hard. We just come to do our thing.
Yes. And I can tell you, Dr. Wendy, in my situation, this person was actually trying to reprimand me on something that wasn't reprimandable. And they copied someone on my team and someone who was outside of the organization that I was partnering with. And that just crossed the line on so many different levels. And I think that when you put a lot of energy or that your core values are based on how you show up and how you treat people, I think when someone does that to you in a way that feels like it just, you know, for me, it was just crossed my core values. It would just went against everything that I, even if I didn't want to say something, I felt compelled to. Because it was, I don't know what's the word for it. It just really was like an attack on my character. And that I value. And I was like, that was the tipping point for me.
I appreciate that. I wanna shift gears a little bit and ask you, for both of you, have you heard of this thing called Bare Minimum Mondays? Have either of you heard of that? Okay, so let me tell you about it. So I saw this maybe about a week or two ago on Market Watch, and it originally was printed in Nerd Wallet. And so there's a woman, and you know, we've got all these wonderful social media trends, and this started out on TikTok. The woman
described
that when she comes in on Mondays, or when she starts work on Monday, her plan is to do less. The plan is to do less. Bare minimum Mondays. I'm not going to pressure myself to be productive as they want. I'm still recovering from the weekend. So I do just the tasks that need to get done, that I think need to get done. And when I'm done with the bare minimum, I can focus on other things of my choice. So if I want to move things around in my office or take some me time, and that this is being encouraged, right? This idea of bare minimum Mondays is being encouraged as a way to promote mental health and productivity in the workplace. Now, I'm going to tell you, it sounds amazing, but when I read it, I was like, oh, that's not for us. The first thing I thought was, oh,
pretty much.
Days is not for us. So
pretty much.
Is this a setup for the gaslighting and for the manipulation? This is one of those things that the bosses get behind and say, yes, everyone, we think this is great. Let's try bare minimum Mondays. And they come in and say, well, Wendy, let me take a look at your stuff from last week. So talk to me about this, and not just the idea of bare minimum Mondays itself, but those types of things that we gather and that people adopt and then push out as it's okay for everyone, but we know that could be coded language that's not okay for people like us. Deborah, why don't you start us out?
Bare minimum Monday. I know people who did bare minimum weeks.
Come on now. Come on. Bare minimum so employment.
That's all I'm saying.
So, you know, on one hand, Lonnie, it could be a great thing because maybe it means that that person is able to prioritize the most important things that need to be done. And they're able to cut through the clutter.
Yep.
So they eliminate all of the busy work. And they're able to focus on those two or three priorities that are really going to move the needle or have an impact. If that can be an interpretation of it, I'm all for it. I think if this is something that you want to adopt, just like anything else, you have to understand that there are going to be, there could be consequences to this.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know if people are in talent discussion meetings saying, yeah, I love Wendy. I love that she implemented that bare minimum Monday. And on Monday, she comes in and, you know, she just, you know, sets the tone so she's not stressed out for the rest of the week. So you have to understand that if you don't want that assigned to you, then I think you need to give it a second thought. But listen, we all know that Black professionals can't do what their peers can do.
That's the level of scrutiny
that we are under, because by the time they got finished with us, it would be, they wouldn't call it bare minimum Monday. They'd be like, Wendy got here, she ate lunch and she left. And that would be the
That's the story.
That's the story. And then 3 years from now, Wendy's going up for her director or VP role, and they're going to like, but do you remember that time where she just would come into work and she really wouldn't work? She would just come in, move some papers around, have lunch, talk to her friends, and then she left. And I just don't know if I can get past that.
And forget about the wellness piece of it, right?
Yeah. See, it'll pop up differently for us.
I don't think I would even participate in a Bear Mondays.
Oh, I already knew you wouldn't. That's not a nobody who's listening to this think that you was gonna do that.
Oh no. Definitely not, because if I work on Saturday and Sunday and I come in and I still have work to do on Monday, I'm gonna work. My bare minimum Monday may really come on Wednesday or Thursday, but because it isn't the appropriate day, then I'm looked upon as not getting the work done.
So, right? and let's add to that, right? Because the way we work, and Deborah, you said it earlier, we work hard. I know that my bare minimum Monday might still outdo 80% of my coworkers.
That's right.
Right? Because the level at which they start is different. We come in differently. We work differently. We plan differently. We communicate differently. So, and even though my performance may be above and beyond theirs, and I dial it back to the bare minimum Monday level, which might still be above theirs, what they recognize is we are not contributing in the way you used to.
That's right.
You're not as successful as you were before.
It's framed that way, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other part of that too, when we talk about like a bare minimum Monday, or because we've all been in the workplace, and I did say that I think Black professionals in particular are just working way too hard. And the reason I say that is because we see people that we may work with and maybe they have bare minimum weeks, right? So while we're at while we are at, you know, in our office or in our cubicle with our heads down, just grinding, they are walking around, they are meeting people, they are talking to people, they're letting people know the value that they bring.
Yeah.
They are letting people know more about who they are as a person. They're sharing what their ambitions are. They're asking other people if they can be of support or they can partner with them. And so then we look up after grinding for 70 hours and go, why did Candace, she just got promoted.
Talk about it.
Right. So yeah. some of the work that we aren't doing that we should be doing, I think we view it differently. Like we don't put as much importance into getting to know the people in our organization, getting to know the influencers. We put more value on actually doing the work. And that's why our 2 + 2 = 5.
Sure.
Right?
Right. Yes.
So, you know, we're thinking, well, I'm doing all this hard work. Clearly, I'm going to get promoted. Clearly, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And it doesn't because the equation, the weighting is off, if you will, right?
Yeah.
So that's why so many of the professionals in our community get frustrated because, you know, we are just grinding and doing all of this work. But guess what? Nobody knows what we're working on.
Mm.
Nobody knows what we're doing. Nobody knows how we did it.
Mm.
Nobody knows what we want to do with it. And nobody knows what we want to do next. And so, you know, eventually, if that pattern continues, you find yourself in the worker bee role.
Yeah. Yeah. You are speaking to me.
It's unfortunate because they, you know, that can be seen as us not understanding the workplace and taking advantage of opportunities to network and getting to learn from through the grapevine and how to promote yourself, because the same activity that other workers may do is viewed differently.
I think yes, it can be, but I think if we're connecting with the right people, that scenario changes, right?
It makes a difference.
So if you're just walking around connecting with your colleagues, that's one thing. But if you're meeting with the head of your department, if you're meeting with your HR business partner, these are people who are going to be in the rooms when your name comes up.
Right.
And they will know you and they will be able to speak on your behalf. So when somebody says, oh, you know, Dr. Wendy, she's on that bare minimum Monday kick, then that person you know will say.
that thing is so funny to me.
They will say, well, absolutely not. Let me tell you about what Wendy's been doing, right? But oftentimes we don't have anybody in the room who knows what we're doing. So what would happen is Lonnie's name comes up and they're like, well, you know, Lonnie's doing that bare minimum Monday. And everybody's like, he is? And they're like, yeah. And that could just be one person. But because nobody else knows you, that is your narrative.
Yeah.
Lonnie, bare minimum Monday.
That's right.
Man, that's not even a good trending topic anymore. Let's try this, right? Because we've talked a lot about people who are experiencing it, but we haven't talked about if you are the person who is impacting people in this way. So I saw something late in the summer from Mind, Body, and Green. I actually really like this site. It's about mental health at work and lots of other things related to that. And it says, and this title was called, Are You a Manipulator? And it lists the behaviors to watch out for in yourself. So I'm gonna read a few of them to you. It says, if you go through great lengths to get your way, if you have a hard time directly voicing your needs, if you project onto others and disguise it as I have trust issues, if you make people feel guilty, if you don't keep your promises, if you do nice things in a very transactional way, so you do it and then you do nice things with expectations, if you are overly persuasive. So my question to you both, Dr. Wendy and to Deborah, fill in this blank. You might be a gaslighter and manipulator if... What else do we need to look out for? What do we want people to look out for in themselves?
You might be a gaslighter or manipulator.
Hmm.
if your goal is to do the minimum amount of work with the maximum amount of credit.
You might be a manipulator if the choice of words you use and your facial expression with the smile on your face don't agree.
Wait, tell me more.
You are attempting to control by your tone of your voice, your choice of words, and the expression on your face.
Wow. I get that. I get that. Well, none of that is me. I'm glad. Y'all didn't hit that one. No, you didn't get me on that one. You got me everything else, but not that one. I think so much here to unpack, so much to unravel. And it just, I'm always shocked by the things that come out of our conversations. And this one is, I think, I didn't even realize it was going to be, it would resonate with me so strongly that I've been manipulated more times than I thought. And before I knew the term gaslighting, that there were gaslighters around me, because so many of the things that we discussed, so many things that you brought up, Deborah, things you brought up, Dr. Wendy, sort of hit me. So I want us to reflect on the things we want people to do from what we discussed in this episode. So for employees, we want you to recognize that it is easy to feel manipulated when you don't have full information. That part of your goal is to get clarity, to ask questions, to put people on, to make people respond to you in ways that help you clarify what's going on. And that escalation is your friend. If there is an issue, you can raise it to the next level and the level after that. And as Deborah told us, she often sent letters to the president because somebody else needs to be involved to get us out of this. Recognize that there are signs of intentional manipulation and you are not losing your mind. So this idea of gaslighting, when you're questioning, was I wrong? Was he right? Did I really do that? Am I not? And that you are not alone in being in experiencing that, and that you understand yourself well. Don't let them trick you. Remember that you need to reframe these conversations when we confront people about this, is that the way I experienced it is, because no one can challenge what you experience and how you feel and your emotions around that. Practice this, right? Get in the habit of confronting people and calling them on the carpet and letting them know that, no, that is inappropriate. I'm not going to stand for that. I'm not going to let you continue to treat me that way, disregard me in that way. Excuse me. Don't disregard the vibe. The vibe check is really important. So when you've got that first meeting and something doesn't feel right, and I've had a few of those, that you go with that. You may not need to act on it at the moment, but always keep that in the back of your mind that there's something here that is off. Question if you are working too hard. Deborah said, we are constantly trying to do the work and accommodate other people's ideas of how we should show up in that space. And it is exhausting, and you don't have to do it that way. Put the culprit to work. When they challenge your presence, they challenge your contributions, ask them to document. What did you observe? That is disconnected from what you told me before. What you just offered is not aligned with what my performance evaluation says. This doesn't meet the standards of the award I just received 3 weeks ago. Remember that how you see you is not always how others see you. So sometimes this gaslighting and this manipulation is about them and about their insecurities that are being deflected. For leaders and managers and supervisors, I want you to think of this, and I love this. Are you futuring people? Are you giving them endless hope for something that will never happen, with no deadline, with no end in sight? We want you to trust people's instincts. When they tell you, I felt this way, believe them. You can unpack it with them, but you can't disregard how someone feels about their experience. Define what it means to coach someone in a general way. Because what we know is it doesn't start with the negative. It doesn't start with you didn't do X or you, or we don't like this. We're never going to stop talking about Bare Minimum Mondays on this show. I can see that right now. It doesn't start there, right? There are other things involved with coaching people to success. Identify the worker bees. This is really important because the people who get stuck in the worker bee role, we want you to bring them into the fold because they're missing out on opportunities. And it is your responsibility as a manager, as a supervisor, as a leader to get them out and to get them out of that loop and to get them off of that treadmill. They should be moving in with intention in the organization. For groups and teams, we want you as a community to recognize the coded language and help each other unpack that and make sense of what that means and how we move together. We want you to call out backhanded compliments. We want you to do that in front of people, with people, so that people recognize that that behavior is not acceptable and we won't support that type of manipulation. We want you to add, these are my words here, we want you to add an anger translator for whatever thing they bring up that is like their Bare Minimum Monday, right? What does that mean for us? So let's think about what they're saying. How do we apply it in a way that is positive, that we make sure we are accountable and responsible, and that we don't get caught up in the twists and smoke and mirrors and that. Support each other in the collective community and recognizing that the work is not always just the task. That the work is about building connections and networking and making sure that the people who raise your name in meetings are doing it in a way that supports your continued path to success. For organizations, we want you to give people permission to call things out by name. Thank you, Miss Ma'am. You're gaslighting me right now. We're all aware of what that is, and we recognize that behavior. We want you to understand from an organizational perspective where the coded language rests in your workplace and get under how it's impacting your employees. We also want you to be very intentional about identifying where people's character is being attacked, because sometimes people are using other tactics that are considered giving feedback and coaching and your performance appraisal to attack you. We don't want that to happen. This is one that makes me laugh. Recognize what the CC means in your organization. When you have a culture and people are copying others that are within and on the outside of your organization, recognize if that is being used as a tool for manipulation, there is an issue with your culture you need to address. And again, this was going to always come up for us. Figure out where the smoke and mirrors lie in your Bare Minimum Monday programming, right? And it might not be Bare Minimum Monday for you. It might be something else that you've identified that we're going to adopt and we're going to implement across this organization, this unit, and this department. But in some ways, people are being ousted by that. People are being ostracized by that. We want you to get rid of that. So if people do not take heed to any of these lessons that we discussed today, Dr. Wendy and Deborah, what is the tax that they pay? What is the black and brown tax for not heeding this advice? Deborah, you start us out.
I think the price that you pay is that we end up spending too much time in our roles because nobody knows us. We end up losing money because we are not progressing in our career. And I think we end up losing confidence in ourselves when we accept the narrative that others have created for us.
Talk about it. Dr. Wendy.
In the event that we don't take heed to learning how to be skillful in responding to the times when we have been manipulated, we could find ourselves in places where the bare minimum Mondays that give the appearance that it's wellness day can hinder our ability to be successful in the organization.
Appearance of wellness. I love that. And I think it's quite clear that if you aren't focusing on this with scrutiny around these behaviors to recognize it, to identify it, and to resolve it, to confront people, that bare minimum Monday turns into tapped out Tuesday, and then work less on Wednesday, and then thinking about doing something else Thursday, and forget about it Friday. You see what I'm saying? It's a pattern that it creates so that you begin to disconnect with the entire thing. And what started as something that was an idea of wellness and support for people begins to trap you and fold in on top of you.
Yeah.
It is always a pleasure to have all of you listening with us here on the Access Point. Deborah, thank you so much for your expertise, for your insight, for your valuable examples. You have given us so much to chew on here. I know we've discussed a lot, so let's keep this conversation going. You can listen to the Access Point wherever you get your podcast. Like, share, comment, subscribe. If there's something that we shared tonight that resonated with you, if you've got a lingering question, there's an aha moment, you've got thoughts for the future, you can always hit us up using TAP Reflection. That's Tap Reflections, hashtag Tap Reflections across all of the various social media. And don't forget about Flipboard, flipboard.com/@theaccesspoint. Deborah Owens, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Wendy, it's always a pleasure. Everybody have a good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night.